This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you're a duck or whether you're a beaver, your fantasy team needs a new receiver. It's Danny and Dusty at lunchtime every day. Maybe you're a tortured fan of Rip City. Danny and Dusty are here to take pity, hoping there's not a center with bad knees on the way. Talking noon till 3, Danny and Dusty on the fan. Yep, I'm singing again, cause they haven't said I can't. Danny and Dusty love the teams the rest of us revile. Raising a Blazers banner would make it all worthwhile. Noon till 3,
an Odyssey station.
Hour number 2, Danny and Dusty with you on this Monday afternoon. Thanks for being a part of our day, letting us be a part of yours. Whether it is 1080 AM, 99.5 HD2, the Odyssey app, twitch.tv/1080AM, the fan, or the party people on the YouTube stream, youtube.com/1080AM, the fan. Let's party. Got a YouTube comment, want to get to. Our NBA crack research staff, which is you, Danny.
Yeah.
Is this the first time in NBA history we've had a 4, 6, and 7 seed all make it through? I mean, the 4, we could probably throw out of it, but I think we've had a couple of times where we've had a 6 and 7.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. We believe Warriors were an 8 seed. I think there's been a couple times 6 and 7. Now, maybe not in the same bracket, the same conference, but 6 and 7 I'm almost certain have. Yeah.
All right, we'll look that up. We're gonna try to get the answers for you. USA Today had their college football scribes all make a list of the top 25 coaches in college football. Released it today. This is not going to be a surprise to you, but 15 of the top 25 reside in two conferences.
Oh no way! Which conferences are those?
The SEC and the Big Ten. Yep. Mm. And the top 10 is dominated by the SEC and the Big Ten. When you look at it, 9 of the top 10 are from the SEC and the Big Ten, which is pretty... I'm looking at this. I see 8 of the top 10, and I don't know why they said 9 of the top 10. Because if you look at it, we can go from 10 down to 1 here. Number 10.
Yeah, because Dabo and Freeman are both in the top 10.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. Number 10 is Brian Kelly of LSU. He's a really good coach. I don't like Brian Kelly.
Not a great person, but great coach.
Phenomenal football coach. A better recruiter than his recruiting videos would lead you to believe.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when it comes to X's and O's, his teams are always dialed in. At Notre Dame, it was a manpower thing. Mm-hmm. At LSU, he is doing a really good job.
Yeah.
Number 9 is Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, he's the portal king, mm-hmm. goes in. Everybody makes a big deal about Dion going to the portal so much. Lane Kiffin rebuilds his roster every damn year through the portal.
And loses dudes in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Quinshon Judkins. I mean,
the big difference between Dion and Lane is that Lane recruits the hell out of high school kids, mm-hmm. too. And he maximizes his quarterback play. He does a phenomenal job. It'll be interesting to see without Jackson Dart mm-hmm. what their quarterback situation looks like, but he is a bona fide, really damn good coach.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knew Lane was a great coach. It was just about maturing and kind of finding who he was.
Kalen DeBoer at Alabama is number eight. You look at what he went through at Alabama this year. You never want to follow the legend. And, you know, there was a, Bama got screwed. Well, they lost three games. And that is still a really good season. You saw what he did at Washington and really everywhere that he has been, deserving of him to be at number eight. Number seven is Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame. You're talking about a coach who, very young, but Marcus Freeman is really damn good. And he is young, and yep. he has connection with his players. And you saw what they did in the college football playoff this year.
I'm going to be interested to see just how good Notre Dame is going forward in the recruiting area.
Without their GM?
Yeah, Chad Bowden, who's at USC now.
They're still pretty good. Number six is where Oregon's Dan Lanning comes in. And you think of Lanning and Freeman going 6-7. Those are two guys that...
Good young coaches.
They're entering year four. Mm-hmm. And we have seen what they've been able to do. Here's what they say about Lanning. While he's only three seasons into his career as a head coach, a 39-year-old former Georgia assistant has transformed the Ducks into one of the elite programs in the FBS. After reaching the Fiesta Bowl in 2023, last year's team went unbeaten in the regular season and has earned the top seed in the college football playoff bracket before losing in a rematch with the Buckeyes. Lanning is one of the biggest names among the next wave of coaches. Number five is James Franklin.
That makes my eyebrow go up a little bit.
I think he's a great coach. Mm-hmm. I think he... Joel Klatt released his top 25 mm-hmm. post-spring. Penn State's number one. And the people talking themselves back into Drew Aller is continuing. And I said this at the time. I think Drew Aller is a fine college quarterback. I don't understand the NFL love affair.
Yeah, we looked at the head of the 2026 NFL mocks, and he was like the second quarterback, and I'm just like, what? Why? Why? I don't get it.
Usually I reserve the judgment when you don't see a guy very much and you don't see him in high leverage situations. We have, and it hasn't been great.
No.
What they say about Franklin is a national championship continues to elude Franklin and the Nittany Lions, though last year's team notched a pair of playoff wins to reach the semifinals. While detractors will focus on what he isn't, Franklin has returned Penn State to national prominence and crafted a Hall of Fame-worthy resume. As with Ryan Day, a title would force a drastic reevaluation of Franklin's career. They're going to be really good this year.
Yeah, but
they are going to be really good.
The title part of that, it's like... Penn State's never been anywhere near close
yeah.
on a talent scale. Not there.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of holes to plug too with Abdul Carter and Tyler Warren leaving, but they bring back that big core mm-hmm. outside of those two guys, which are big ones.
Yeah, and look, they've put a lot of guys in the NFL in the trenches in the last couple of years, but Tyler Warren was their leading receiver, pass catcher, yards, everything, because their wide receivers sucked.
Yeah. Well, like, they were banged up. Like, they were good at the beginning of the year, and then they all got injured. Like, they were injured everywhere.
They had nothing to go to, and it's not like they're not Ohio State. They aren't getting top 10 wide receivers in the NFL draft year after year after year after year.
Yeah. They're going to be an interesting one to follow. Sark at Texas comes in at four. Dabo Swinney of Clemson comes in three. And then you have Ryan Day at Ohio State as the number two coach in college football, according to USA Today. You win a national title, and all of a sudden, the whole idea of your 70-10 record
starts mattering a little bit more.
Yeah, it obviously holds a lot of weight, and they got over the hump, and they went through it last mm-hmm. year, losing to Oregon, losing to Michigan. And then they peaked at the right time last year. Number one, and rightfully so, he has more first-round picks than losses. Kirby Smart at Georgia.
Yeah.
Kirby Smart at Georgia, the number one football coach in the land, and I don't bat an eye at that one bit. No, Not one stinking bit.
Look, if you want to put Ryan Day up there, it's fine. He joins the list of, what, four active coaches who have now won a national title? It was three, wasn't it? It was Dabo, Kirby, and...
Mack Brown, and Mack Brown's gone.
Yeah, so now it's three.
He is now the third.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Mack Brown, he gone. it's hard to win a national title in college football. Mm-hmm. And with Nick Saban gone, with, you know, even Jimbo Fisher, mm-hmm. Mack Brown, those guys out, it's a very small list of national title winning coaches. What I find interesting about this list is that it's not just dominated by the Big Ten and the SEC, and rightfully so. They're the two best leagues. They pay the coaches. That's where the coaches are going to go. But this is wholly a what can you do for me now list, because Kyle Whittingham, who is one of the top 10 coaches in college football, has dropped out of this, and he is now at 12 and he just can't find a quarterback, for God's sakes, but they still find a way to be competitive and good. But what stuck out to me was the fall of some really big names across college football and what the change of scenery will do for you. And this isn't just these guys are great coaches. They're in great situations as well. That's why the Big Ten and the SEC is littered throughout this, is because the great coaches go to the places with the great resources. And some of the guys that have infiltrated the list are guys like Rhett Lashley, who wins the ACC in his first year of SMU being in the ACC. He's only a third year coach entering his fourth season. He's done an incredible job at SMU, but what is the thing? SMU bought their way into the ACC. They've got unlimited resources. He pops up into this list. He is one spot ahead of Lincoln Riley at USC, and nobody would have had Lincoln Riley on this list at 23rd before last season, and he's two games over 500 at USC.
Over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, 13-11 over the last 2 years will do that to you.
Yep, and this is a what can you do for me now? Not seen on this list. And Mario Cristobal's in at 25. Mm-hmm. Not seen on the list. Jonathan Smith has dropped off dramatically. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the grass isn't always greener, and you go to a new place, and after 1 year, people want Jonathan Smith fired at Michigan State.
I remember Stuart Mandel had his list, I want to say like 2 months, month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. We talked about it, and Jonathan Smith was like 14 or 15. So it's kind of eye of the beholder type stuff, and people are, I think, at least on the national level, interested and excited about what Smith's going to do at Michigan State going forward. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of very real, like, oh, what have you done recently? Because like Kirk Ferentz is on this list at 14,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, well, what has Ferentz done?
He has consistently won at a school that never has a quarterback, sure. never has an offense, and mm-hmm. just finds ways to win in a really tough conference. And he and Whittingham, they get the, you guys
done it for 20 years,
have been so consistent mm-hmm. for so long and so good, we can't deny you. Like they'd get the David Shaw treatment, mm-hmm. right? David Shaw would be on this list. Guys like Spencer Danielson at Boise State, mm-hmm. Kenny Dillingham at Arizona State.
Yeah, that surprises me when you talk about the most, like,
well, hold on, they're not making the list. They're not in the top 25.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Not making that top 25 is surprising to me, especially when you're talking about the recency bias. Like, Leavitt right now is, what, he's the third favorite for the Heisman?
I don't know.
Depending on which market you look at?
Yeah.
Like, you were turning most of your team. Now, mm-hmm. you are losing Scadaboo, which might be heart and soul
and
of your team.
Danielson is losing Ashton Jeanty, pretty good.
Pretty helpful guys. But both those coaches have shown what they can do. And for Danielson at Boise State, it's kind of like picking up a baton that was dropped, where Dillingham is starting it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
They're getting better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Kenny Dillingham is finally, we've said it for years and years and years, sleeping giant down in Tempe. He's starting to wake them up. And consistency will be the key, as with any program. Mm-hmm. But they're finally recruiting at a high level. The coaches are not leaving en masse after you have one good season. Mm-hmm. Kenny Dillingham's a damn good coach.
Yes.
And he is going to make Arizona State consistent down there. That's the guy who's going to be on this list in a year or two. Or should be on this list now. He will be on there next year. I think Jonathan Smith, if he has a good year next year, he'll be back on this list, because this is wholly what can you do for me now?
Yeah. And that's the part of this. It's like, I think it's two very different lists when you're talking about who are the best active coaches versus who are the best coaches, quote unquote, right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's you can cut and slice that a lot of different ways.
I don't disagree, though, that 15 of the 25 best coaches reside in two conferences. And the reality is that's probably just going to continue to be that way.
Yeah.
Right? Like Dillingham, probably not going to leave Arizona State because he's entrenched there. He's from there.
It's his home. It's like he's already at his spot.
Literally where he's at. Dabo isn't going to leave Clemson until he retires. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, it's free game.
Or until they run DeBoer out of town in Alabama, and then maybe he'll...
Yeah, you're telling me that an SEC school isn't going to come calling to Rhett Lashley and say, hey, I know you got great resources at SMU, but...
Would you like even more resources?
And come and do the damn thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I see this getting even more imbalanced, and like that's a bummer for Big 12, ACC, and Pac-12, in the future of the Pac-12, but it's a reality that we live in now. All right, there's your top 25 coaches. As said by USA Today, Big Ten dominating, Dan Lanning of Oregon coming in at number six. Coming up next, we've got a couple news and notes from the NFL. We have one player who I don't think he understands it, and a coach who definitely understands it. Danny and Dusty on the Fan. All right, I went and I did the research on this. No. It's Reddit, so I don't know. But there has been a sixth and a seventh seed advancing in the NBA playoffs only three times in NBA history.
Yeah.
1987, when Houston and Seattle both advanced.
Mm-hmm.
2023, when Golden State and the Lakers both advanced.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year with the Timberwolves and the Warriors. So Golden State's been part of it twice. And if you're keeping track at home, two of those three are since the advent of the play-in tournament.
Yep.
So in two in the last three seasons.
And both those Curry teams made some changes and got some health that helped them down the stretch to where they weren't your typical 6, 7, 8 type seeds.
And all of them, Western Conference.
Because the West is better.
Historically.
And has been better forever.
But it's always been, it's three times in NBA history is pretty significant, I think. Now, it should be noted that NBA history in this, they expanded the playoffs to in 84.
Yeah. So that's why you get it 3 years later in 87.
Yeah. So it has not happened very often. All right. NFL news, notes, nuggies. Abdul Carter is addicted to requesting retired numbers. The newest member of the New York Football Giants, the third overall pick in the draft, immediately asked Lawrence Taylor if he could unretire his number and wear the number 56, to which LT, probably 41 beers deep, said, no, that's not going to happen. My number's retired. It's going to stay retired. Don't even think about it.
Look, if your name is Julius Peppers or Javon Curse, you might have the cachet to do that.
I don't think anybody does.
Well, I'm saying,
I know what you're saying, yeah. And I'm saying, no, you don't.
The only reason I would say Julius Peppers, where'd he go to school?
North Carolina.
Where did LT go to school?
North Carolina. I still don't think that.
I don't either.
I don't think you even go there.
No.
Not with Lawrence Taylor, not Neva. Then Abdul Carter went to Phil Simms and said, hey, I wore 11 at Penn State. Can I wear your retired number 11? And Phil Simms initially goes, yeah, sure.
Mm.
And then he talked to his family, and his family's like, what are you doing?
Mm.
No. And so now Abdul Carter has been vetoed for two retired numbers for the New York Giants. What are you doing?
Well, thanks, Warren Moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Warren Moon.
Well, Warren Moon, he found a loophole.
Yeah.
It's not for the Houston Oilers. It's for the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
Two different legacies.
Which Warren Moon also spilled that the Titans are getting new uniforms.
Mm.
They desperately need them. And I hope when they get new uniforms, they get rid of the flaming thumbtack.
Yeah.
So they don't look like a World League of American football team anymore.
Yeah. So bad.
They are. And it's a great color scheme, too. That's the unfortunate part.
It's just awful.
Yeah.
Awful uniforms. So, thanks, Warren Moon, because he gave unretired number one, which it shouldn't be retired. That should be retired for the Houston Texans.
Mm-hmm. Oilers.
But I digress. Mm. Abdul Carter, boy, the balls.
Look, you almost have to admire it in a sense. It's Russell Westbrookian in, like, just going for it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you better be, like, if you're asking somebody to unretire a number, and like I said, with Warren Moon, you get the loophole. Texans or Oilers versus Titans. That's not the case with the New York Football Giants. And you're talking about, if not the best defensive player of all time, one of the top two or three. At worst.
It's like, look, it's the same thing you tell your buddy at the end of a Friday night at the bar. Just shoot your shot, bro.
Yeah, but look, that's what he's doing.
But Abdul
right
Carter,
now,
as good as he is.
Worst they can do is say no.
He is not the level of prolific prospect that can shoot that shot.
I think he's really good.
I think I do too. I think he's really good. But have you heard anybody talk about Abdul Carter being a guy who's going to fundamentally change the game of football?
Look,
or like, be like, you have to be a transcendent prospect to make that ask.
Cam Ward isn't either.
No.
And I think that's where this kind of starts. But I don't think anybody should be asking for to unretire a number.
Mm.
Unless you're Jerry Rice asking Steve Largent to unretire 80 when he went and played for the Seahawks, that's probably the only time that you can do that. But not as a rookie coming into the NFL being like, I'm looking around, I step into MetLife Stadium, I look around the outer bowl, and I go, you know what? 56 and 11, I like those numbers, yeah. I'll wear those. You know what I think he should wear? 45. 56 minus 11.
Mm.
Just wear 45. Get it over with. It's a terrible number, but...
But the number ranges are wide open these days.
Yeah.
I was thinking 55.
Go 55?
Yeah.
Well, offensive lineman probably already has that.
Do the Giants already have a number one?
What?
Do they already have a number one?
Oh, dude. Don't get me started with a...
Yeah, it's right. You weren't here for that.
Defensive line... One, don't like the number one.
Yeah.
Two, defensive linemen wearing single-digit numbers...
Don't like
...is
it.
A crime against humanity.
You don't like Thibodeau wearing five?
I don't like any defensive lineman wearing... Or edge rusher wearing a single-digit number.
I like the 440-pound kid from Florida wearing zero. That was just tremendous. It was the biggest zero you've ever seen in your entire life.
Yeah, well, let's see. What are the available numbers for the New York Giants?
I think he switched to 21.
That's what he did?
Yeah.
I think he landed on 21?
Well, no, at Florida, because he was zero. Yeah, yeah, he was zero, yeah, I think, his freshman or sophomore year, and then he was 21. I was like, hell yes.
Yeah. I don't... Oh, boy. I wonder if... Because now he's waiting so long, all those single digits are going to be swooped up if that's what he wants to do.
Especially if he wants to play for the Yankees.
0, 1, 2, 3. He could wear number 4, 7, 10, 11, 12. Well, not 11. 11. Well, how many numbers are retired, too? 17, 18, 19. Boy. It looks like every number is taken up by the... You can wear 30, 31, 32, 34. Go sweetness.
Mm.
Yeah, somebody's already wearing 45 as well. He's going to get stuck with a terrible number.
Go 67. 56 plus 11.
Ooh, 67
that's an
is...
Lineman for sure.
Yeah, that's an offensive lineman right there.
Jimmy Morrissey is wearing number 67 center out of Pitt. Yep. Nope. 99. We're 99.
What's, isn't Dexter?
99? No, Roy Robertson Harris is 99.
That's
you can kick his ass out of the way. You're fine there. Yeah. The UTEP, 9-year pro out of UTEP. Yeah. Golly, he's huge. 6'7", 268.
Whew.
That's a big boy.
Yeah.
All right. The other piece of NFL news, I love this to death. You see Jim Harbaugh woke up in the middle of the night? What do you think Jim Harbaugh thinks about in the middle of the night when he wakes up?
Football
America.
Guy. Football
tater
guy.
Tots.
Football guy.
He told Rich Eisen that he woke up at 3 a.m. and said to himself, I need to get Justin Herbert to the Hall of Fame.
That's the coach's version of Chad Johnson. Did you see they had, I can't remember what show, it might have been the show he does with Shannon Sharp, they had one of the assistants on from the Bengals during his time period. Do you know what Chad Johnson used to do?
Probably call him in the middle of the night.
At 2 to 4 in the morning before getting ready for a game, and he'd just say, I'm open, and hang up.
Yeah, that sounds about right. He's probably heading in after a night at the bar.
I'm surprised he wouldn't just send him pings of like a 7-Eleven location. Always open.
Yeah. He was just like, hey, coach, I'm open. And then hang up.
I think that there is a odd couple pairing between Herbert and Harbaugh that works.
It works. Yeah.
It works.
The chill spectrum versus the not chill spectrum. Like they are literally the poles.
Yeah. And he's just waking up going, God. Mind you, it's May.
Mm.
And Jim Harbaugh's waking up in the middle of the night going, I need to get Herbert to the Hall of Fame.
It's got
to
be May.
I need to get him there.
Can we work on some receivers?
Yeah, that's what he said. Mm. He said that we just need to get him the targets that are going to get him there. Mm. And so they went out, they got Trey Harris in the draft. They got Aronde Gadsden II in the draft. Aronde Gadsden, by the way,
son of a former Portland Forest Dragon.
Mm. Who I ball boyed for the Forest Dragons.
There you go.
And I would give...
I poured drinks for the Forest Dragons.
I would give Aronde Gadsden a stick of gum before every game.
There was a lineman for the Forest Dragons...
Had to have gum.
...that worked as a checker at Albertsons.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Growing up.
But they have Ladd McConkey, Mike Williams, Trey Harris, Aronde Gadsden II, Will Disley, Jalen Reagor, Quentin Johnson, Darius Davis. Boy, they're still looking for a number one. And they are hoping that it is the Ole Miss product, Trey Harris.
Mm. Hey, Quentin Johnson at least started catching the ball. Like, that was a problem for him his rookie year.
Yeah, also suggested for the role.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, mildly helpful.
I mean, looking at the resume, probably something you want to do. But I love that Jim Harbaugh is waking up in the middle of the night thinking about how he needs to get his quarterback to the Hall of Fame.
Mm.
It's the best.
Dude, I mean, look. If I'm a quarterback, like, that's what I want to hear.
His wife's like, I know, Jim. I know. They're going to have like a ninth kid and they're going to name it Justin. Harbaugh's got a whole herd of children.
I mean, would you expect anything less?
No. No. I think he has, let's see, seven.
Well,
he's got seven kids.
Justin works with the J's too.
I was going to say, do they all start with the letter J?
No. He's got Jay, James, Jack, John, Grace, Addison, Catherine.
Wife went out on that
one. What, dude?
All the boys with J's.
Yeah.
All the boys with J's.
That's just, you give up.
Well, I feel like naming rights were given to dad for the boys. And he really went out on a limb there with Jack and John, his dad and brother's names.
Yeah, right?
But Justin does fit.
Justin does fit with the boys' names. Justina.
Ooh.
I could see him being like, hey.
Or just a Justine.
Justine, yeah. Just like Justine Bateman.
There you go.
Jason Bateman, yeah. Family ties.
There you go. All right.
What would we do, baby?
That's me talking Harbaughs.
There you go.
I love Jim Harbaugh.
I mean, I feel like if you don't, you're either an Ohio State fan or you just don't like football.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I'm here for it.
No, sounds good.
God bless.
I like it. All right, coming up next on Our Worst Day on the Web, what are you willing to do to help out humanity? Because there's one man that is doing more than I think a lot of people would ever willingly subject themselves to, and we'll get that next year on Danny Dusty. First, here's Big Kahuna with Sports Center Update.
Hamburgers, the cornerstone of any nutritious breakfast.
It's time for today's Worst Day on the Web. With Danny and Dusty on Odyssey and 1080 The Fan.
Well, that sucks.
Any of you guys like snakes?
Oh, hell no.
Are you out on snakes entirely? Yeah.
Not a fan.
Yeah, out in my mowing the front lawn yesterday, came across two garter snakes.
Did you scream?
One of them with the red stripe all the way down the back of it, too. And nice. It was not a Jamaican beer.
Hooray beer.
Yeah.
God, they didn't bring those back.
I don't mind the gardener snakes as much. They give me the creeps, but...
They just gum you to death.
I don't like going... And they poop everywhere. It smells terrible. I don't like going places that have Killy snakes.
So basically, yeah,
snakes can just F right off.
Southeastern Asia and Australia and the Philippines and all that. It's Florida. All just all off your list.
Yeah. Like Eastern Oregon, like rattlesnakes. Yeah. I don't like them.
Well, they also, I mean, unless don't you like step on them, they're going to give you a heads up.
That's the whole rattling part. Yeah. That's like, what they do.
Yeah. But like in Southeast Asia and the Oceania continent region, like it doesn't matter. They just bite for fun.
Yeah, I'm not in on that.
Sounds like a Danny snake.
Oh, dude, right?
No.
There was a little derail here. My algorithm has the animals that will kill you stuff that pops up every now and then.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what kind of fish it was. It has a very, 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 it looks like a small barracuda.
Okay. This is I'm trying to get
very
the visual
sleek,
of that. Yeah.
Very sleek fish with like razor sharp teeth and a long beak kind of a deal.
Sure.
And this thing's probably
nightmare fuel.
Yeah. Well, again, this is in Australia and these guys are fly fishing and he's like, oh yeah, here we go. And he takes off his like Australian leather cowboy hat, you know, full Mick Dundee, and he dips the brim in the water and the fish flies at it like 100 miles an hour and locks on to the hat and he just pulls it up and it's like 2 feet long.
Oh, caught a fish.
And he's like, yeah, you gotta be careful out here and make sure you don't have your toes exposed. And I'm like, otherwise the fish bite them off.
That's a knife.
Yeah, like that's Australia. Back to the point here. There is a dude named Tim Freed who there is a big medical study in. He's actually like a part of this world now. It's actually kind of crazy. He has let some of the most venomous snakes on the planet bite him 200 times. Purposefully.
Mm-mm. This now, is one, he has, I'm assuming when he does this, he has all of the anti-venom there.
Well, no, that's the problem. Is there's not a lot of anti-venom that exists in the world. Like, one of the big things in this world is that there's no universal cure-all for the, what is it, the boom slang? The boom slang, I believe, is the most deadly snake on the planet.
Yeah, that'll kill you like in an hour.
And it basically liquefies your insides.
Nope.
There's no anti-venom. If you get bit, you're dead.
Yeah.
Like, it's terrifying. This guy has taken it upon himself to, again, be bit this many times by a whole host of incredibly venomous snakes to create a better anti-venom. Because he's been bitten so many times, these antibodies are building up in him and like he's building a literal tolerance to this stuff. And there is science being done. The company Sentamax? Some God,
I believe
it?
It's called Skinamax.
Yeah, no, definitely not that. but there was a guy at a research facility at this company who was they're looking for this because there's one company that basically does most of this research around the world. It's a very kind of niche industry, but snake bites kill tens of thousands of people every year.
Yeah.
Across the world. And whether it's first world nations, third world nations, regardless, it depends on where you're at. Like, even though the US is a first world nation, we don't have that many because the level of deadly snakes here is just not that high. Now we do have some, certainly, but it's not Australia. It's not South America. It's not the tropics, basically. Like that's where they'll kill you snakes live. This guy has let himself get bit basically across the board. Black mambas, taipans, cobras, crates, and others.
With no anti-venom.
So, well, they have some version of it. Now, there's some anti-venoms that allow, like, they aren't, like, pure cure-alls.
How much does this guy get paid?
He's, up until this point, was doing it for free kind of a deal.
This guy, you stupid or something?
For love of the game. Basically, this guy was found by a researcher. Because basically what they were doing before that was that they were calling like snake handlers and like other researchers.
Yeah.
Trying, because those are the people that are going to be most exposed to these snakes most regularly and most likely to be bit. And basically like, hey, can we get your blood? But they were running up against it. They just weren't finding people that were bitten by certain snakes within certain windows that could take this stuff from. This guy was self-inducing it.
He's Australian, I'm assuming.
It actually doesn't say.
I'm going to assume Floridian or Australian.
I was just going to say or Florida.
Yeah, actually,
I mean, those are the no-brainer. Yeah, he's definitely from one of those two places. I just can't imagine the level of dumb that this guy is.
So the strategery.
The level of the game, just bite me, bro.
So the company's called Centivax. And the CEO, right? He basically was like, how can we do something different here? And that's how he ended, ultimately traced this guy down. And they were able to extract antibodies from his blood that gave them protection against like 13 different types of venom.
Well, I'll be damned. He's from California.
Yeah. There you go. And then they added another antibody that they were able to isolate. And it gave him like protection against 20 of the most like venomous snakes. And then they did some additional work. And so they were giving it to mice and horses to see if they would be able to kind of survive. And the horse is big enough that its body, it's very hard to break it down. And so you could recycle this. Basically, this guy has kickstarted this new wave of anti-venom. He is now the lead director of herpetology for Centivax. So basically, his blood is essentially like proprietary information.
Where they find this guy? Like TikTok? Is this where this guy is getting his snake bite on? Like,
I guess the word of mouth. They didn't identify like kind of where he came from or what it was, but
golly, all you gotta do, you know what I googled to find out where he's from? Snake bite guy.
Mm. Tim Freedy.
Tim Freedy, self-taught snake expert based in California. What the hell?
Check Jimmy out.
I mean, this is like, what was that movie that just came out? Mickey 17, the guy that gets paid to die.
No idea.
Yeah, that's got what's his name? It's the Twilight Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pattinson.
Paddington.
Paddington Bear.
Different one.
Yeah, the highest rated movie of all time, according to Rotten Tomatoes.
It's a good movie, dude.
It's a good one. But there was a scene in that movie, in the trailer, where they're like, they purposely put him in space in a spacesuit and like expose him to radiation and have him like count down like when he starts going blind and his skin, how much it's burning, like because knowing that he's going to die and basically be brought back to life kind of a deal. This is like the real life version of that.
It's a whole lot of him just going,
what in the world is this?
Yeah, I'm on the Centivax website and it has like his picture and his bio. He looks like a lunatic. I mean, this guy looks like a guy who would have snake bites. Look at this dude. Like, go ahead and Google yourself some Tim Freedy, and you'll be like, yeah, that fits. That actually works. That works actually very well for him. He's a mysterious man, though, because nobody really knows anything about him other than he was getting bitten by a snake on purpose.
It wasn't like he was like...
For nothing.
It wasn't like he went to school for it and was like this sought-after expert. This isn't like... Actually, it's more like Steve Irwin. Like, straight-up love of the game.
Yeah.
It's truly crazy.
This guy's nuts, dude. Yeah.
It's a worst day on the web.
Well, good for him, though.
Like with a good cause?
Somebody's got to do it.
Right?
Somebody has to do it?
He said some of the bites were incredibly painful. Some of them he said he didn't even feel. And I'm like, that's a you problem, dog.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, his Twitter feed is a trip, too. Looks like he got off Twitter in, like, 2024. Mm.
That's probably when they gave him the contract with the NDA.
Yeah. Anybody want some Venom Week picks?
Yeah.
No, I'm good.
Want to see my necrotic limb?
These are the things that he tweets out. He's like, my last Black Mamba bite. Cool, dude.
The last Black Mamba bite, which means there was previous.
Yeah, there's
Black
several
Mamba
others.
Bites.
Golly. He looks like, to give people a point of reference here, if you know our former engineer, Crazy Eyes McGinley, he gives a few of the Crazy Eyes McGinley vibes in his photos.
Yeah, just with the shaved head.
Yeah, it just kind of looks just like him.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. That's our worst day on the web. Snakes. Yikes,
I hate them. People that own snakes, too.
They're always weird people.
Ooh, buddy.
Not weird people, but there's just something, like, I know somebody I went to high school with, sweet as could be, loved her snake.
I tell you what, you would never think
that she was a snake person.
The Venn diagram of snake owners and also, like, trench coat owners is probably pretty close to a circle.
I keep a snake in a trench coat.
No, you'd be surprised. You'd be surprised. Like, I know, like, I know one guy that has a bunch of snakes and, like, reptiles and stuff, and I love them. They're great people. I would go over there as a kid or in high school.
Mm.
Terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's they're the people that, yeah, but you know that you want to keep them on your good side. So when S goes down, they're going to spare you.
Yeah.
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 It's like it's like that one checker at QFC.
I'm definitely not letting my kids spend the night over there.
Yeah, no, they were in a different building, all of them, which made you feel a little
okay,
bit
that's
more
better.
Safe.
Yeah, because like when you hear about like an exotic animal gets out and kills the family pet or family member, I'm like, oh, no way, the wild animal that's incredibly dangerous killed somebody?
Oh, no.
Shocking. Who saw it coming?
Yeah.
Clearly not all of the warning labels.
Everybody.
Ooh, so. What would you rather not deal with, deadly spiders or deadly snakes? Yes. I'm going to go.
You nailed it.
Snakes.
Like a deadly spider, don't like it. Multiple spiders are what freak me out.
The arachnophobia?
Multiple spiders
down
are
in the basement with a blowtorch?
Yeah. A single snake, enough. When you see like the videos of them like lifting up, like, hey, we heard something outside our shed, and so we looked underneath, and there's like 50 snakes. I'm like, burn everything.
Yeah. Yeah. See, but the worst part is with both of those, they could be right next to you and you have no idea.
The one video that pops up from that all the time on social media that in South America somewhere, cool. The two giant snakes that just fall through the ceiling. You're like, why are there two anacondas in the roof? I'd rather deal with the big snakes.
Oh, that's where they went.
Yeah.
We lost him. We thought it was like years ago.
Yeah,
like,
no, he's been up there eating the raccoons. Yeah,
they were pretty small when we lost them.
Yeah, man.
That's the snake and the alligator in the sewer type deal.
I had a buddy. We lived in an apartment, and my buddy Dan lost. He had like a spotted lizard. It was really cool. It was like white, this white lizard that was like black spots all over. Super cool. Wasn't supposed to have it. Lost it, was like, probably dead, you know, figured that. About a year later, I had a buddy who was working maintenance for this same apartment complex in college. He's like, hey, found Dan's lizard. I was like, what? Mm. He's like, it was alive and behind the refrigerator. It survived like a year. And somebody else had moved into that apartment and was living there.
Still in the same unit?
People
wow. are dropping stuff on the floor, that's for sure.
Oh, man.
All right, that's our worst day on the web. Coming up next, the passing of the torch happened in San Antonio. We'll get to that next year on Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan. The end of an era in San Antonio has officially transpired as of this morning as the San Antonio Spurs introduced Mitch Johnson as the head coach of the San Antonio Spurs. But not before the legend himself, Greg Popovich, got up there and, well, he had a little something to say.
I'm no longer a coach. I'm El Jefe.
El Jefe, the boss.
He had a shirt on that just read El Jefe across the front and on the back, Senor Popovich.
I love that.
He did that with Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili flanking him. And, if you haven't seen it yet, it's very tough to watch.
Yes.
Pop. Suffered a stroke in November and suffered a mini stroke, I want to say almost 8 weeks ago now. It's very clear that it has limited him.
Well, they say that it was a mild stroke. There's no such thing as a mild stroke. You can tell he does not have the use of his left arm. His left leg is not doing well either, and which is clear sign of a stroke.
Yeah.
No matter how mild they say it is, it's very serious in any capacity, and you could see it right there. He's not doing well.
No.
And he already was aging in front of our own eyes, mm-hmm. right? Like, Pop was no spring chicken.
He's 76.
And you could tell it's aged him even more. Like, the past 7 months have been even more aggressive with his aging and his health. And look, I just hope his sense of humor was there.
Yeah.
His personality's there. And I just hope we have several more years of El Jefe in San Antonio.
It's like the old adage that, you know, the only minor surgery is one that happens to somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
100%.
You could tell Pop wanted to be there, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
He wanted to do it, and he wanted to be a part of it. He didn't want to be in the background. He's moving into a senior advisory role with the team.
And that was his first public appearance since his stroke in November.
Yes.
Like, there have been, I think, like, three photos of him mm-hmm. at various times. But it's like the TMZ paparazzi type shots. None of them have been up close. He has not acknowledged it. We have not been able to see him actually move. It's hard to see, but at the same time, he's doing about as well as you can. And his road to recovery is going to be even longer, man.
Yeah. And, you know, it hurts to watch after being in the room with him so many times over the year and all the press conferences and see what that can do to you. But it was good to see him up there. It was good to see Timmy and Manu and a lot of the guys that have been there over the years there to support him.
Yep. So no doubt what his impact was.
All right, come up in hour number three. We will keep it in the NBA. We had another game seven that, while a dud, not as big of a dud, but what does this mean for the Houston Rockets going forward, and how dangerous are the Golden State Warriors in these playoffs? We'll get to that next here in hour number three on Danny and Dusty, Tenny the Fan.